Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. It's July. It's Nonprofit Radio. We've got the live music, and that can only mean one thing. It's our 750th show and 15th anniversary jubilee.
Woo!
Woo's right. Here's our associate producer, Kate, with what's coming up for show number 750.
Hey, Tony. Your co-host is Claire Meyerhoff. We've got much more live music from Scott Stein. Our contributors, Gene Takagi and Amy Sample Ward, are here. Everyone is with us.
Thank you very much, Kate. Claire Meyerhoff, how are you? So, creative producer, Nonprofit Radio, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm just in awe that once again, every year, we come together, the same gang of six, and put on this fantastic show. And this one is number, can it really be true, 750.
True.
That's a huge number, 750. Like when you were a kid, if like someone was saving up to buy something that cost $750, that was, you know, a lot of money. If you went to the grocery store now and it came to 750, you'd be like, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. So 750 really is a huge number, and 15 years.
Yeah. July of 2010, the show began. As you counseled me, because of the first two shows were the Tony Martinetti show. You counseled me that that was a mistake, that nobody's going to know what the hell that means. I was playing off one of my early influences. I thought, well, that guy has a show named for him. So, but you showed me the correct path. You know, you got to have nonprofit in there somewhere. And I chose Nonprofit Radio, and we're going to be talking a little about radio today. But yes, it was July 2010. It was 15 years ago. Well, and you've been with me since.
I have, because we knew each other before for a couple of years through the wonderful world of planned giving, which we both are professionals in, and we knew each other that way. And we had dinner in Cary, North Carolina at a steakhouse. And at that table, you said to me, you know what? I want to do a radio show about nonprofits. And I was like, and this was before like podcasting was really commonplace or anything like that. And I was like, well, have you done a radio show before? No. But I know I'd be great at it. I'd love to do it. And I go, well, you know, there's a lot to doing a radio show. Do you know about this? Do you know about that? Because my background for our audience is I worked in radio news for many, many, many years. I've worked at XM Satellite Radio. I've worked for ABC Radio and WTOP in Washington, D.C., the all news station. And so I know a lot about production and putting things together and how radio really is something that you can kind of do it all by yourself, as opposed to television, where you need all these other elements that come in, like camera work and all that. So I said to Tony, I go, well, you know what, you know, I'll help you with this. And you were like, oh, you know, that would be great. And we discussed the name and some other things. And then I made for you, I thought what would be really helpful would be to make these kind of show sheets that when you're pre-interviewing people, so maybe you can talk a little about that. What should I make?
Yeah, I still use your show sheets for the run of show. Kate and I use them every single week. Yeah, so, you know, over the years I've adapted it, but it's based off of what you gave me for like show number three or something or whatever. So
right.
let's bring some other folks in.
Sure. So I'd like to talk a little bit about our influences in radio, because what Tony said to me, he said, I love, you know, car talk, and I love these radio shows. They're so important to me. So I'd like to talk a little bit about everyone else's influence is in radio. My quick is I grew up around New York City, so we had a lot of radio. I listened to WNEW, you know, Scott Muni, Allison Steele, the Nightbird on WNEW. And I loved radio from, you know, when I was a kid. So how about everybody else? Scott, what did you grow up with? In the Midwest.
Yeah, I grew up in Akron, Ohio, and the station that really was pivotal to me was WAPS 91.3 The Summit, which is a wonderful music station. They're still around, still doing great stuff, emphasis on independent music and local music and just stuff that wasn't getting played anywhere else. And really, it's not not an overestimation to say that, like, it, or an overstatement to say they, it really helped shape my musical taste for years to come.
Hey,
cool.
Amy.
Very cool. Amy, yeah.
What you got?
Well, I did not grow up listening to the radio because my dad loved music and was always playing his own curated, you know, playlist, record.
Your dad, Tim. Tim.
That's right, Tim. The one and only Tim Sample. And so I associate radio with when I got a car and turned 16 and actually drove myself places and was like, what? You mean to tell me that there is music that is not blues? Oh, how interesting. So I would listen to any radio station just for, you know, like that eyes opening. Oh my gosh, there's so much out there in the world experience. Yeah.
That warms my heart as a radio girl. That really, really warms my heart because the car, you know, the radio, the airwaves, traditional terrestrial radio is just the airwaves and they're free. And basically, right. Basically anyone could have a radio station and broadcast it. And the FCC.
Well, and I grew up, you know, in the American classic situation for that, like country roads, no other cars, windows down.
Nice.
Just listening, you know.
I love that so much. Gene, what do you have for us?
So I'm like Amy and didn't listen to a lot of music on the radio because I had mixtapes back then. And so that was my big thing. But if I was listening to the radio, it was often listening to like local sports teams. And I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia. So the Vancouver Canucks, go Canucks, was a big thing for me. And Seattle Supersonics back in the day, the NBA, and bring back a Seattle NBA team.
Wow, that's really amazing. And you grew up in Canada, so everything had a C in front of it.
Yeah, right? if there was a popular music station I listened to, it was C-Fun, which was now defunct. But yeah, that was the pop station back in the day.
And did you listen to the games on and the sports on AM or FM?
Oh, it was almost always on AM. I don't think FM had sports back then.
Right, right. That's cool. Hey, Kate, we know you're younger than we are, but do you ever listen to the radio?
Oh, yeah. Mostly in the car. But my mom loves the like South Jersey classic rock stations. So that was constantly on wherever we went. Grocery shopping, to the beach, like that's all I think we listened to.
Do you remember the call letters?
No.
W, what it was?
But I bet you do know every word to Living on a Prayer.
Oh, for sure. if Scott started playing it, I could probably sing it.
It's Bon Jovi country.
Right. South Jersey, Bon Jovi country. And Bruce Springsteen, of course.
Bruce Springsteen. So, Tony, how about you? What are your earliest radio memories?
Yeah. Rock and roll, 102.7 WNEW. You mentioned Scott Muni and Allison Steele. There were others. Pat St. John, mm-hmm. classic rock DJ in New York City.
Dennis Elsis.
Dennis Elsis, exactly right. Yep. Dennis. He was what?
Pete Fornatel.
Pete Fornatel. Yeah, you were obviously listening as well. You remember them better.
Yeah,
yes. Pete Fornatel had that twangy voice. Pete Fornatel.
He wrote a book, Radio in the Television Age. And I went into the city because they had a signing at a bookstore. So he was there and Dennis Elsis was there. And I was going to Plattsburgh State at the time. And Dennis Elsis, Pete Fornatel wrote in my book. And then Dennis Elsis wrote, "Rock lives all over, even in Plattsburgh," he wrote. And do you know who I gave that book to for his collection? I gave it to Sam a few years ago when I visited his studio. I gave it to Sam in New York.
Our old producer, Sam Liebowitz.
He has a really nice collection of like books about radio and music and stuff. And I thought that book would fit well in there. So I gifted that book to him. And
cool. That's very thoughtful. Very thoughtful. And then later years, you know, you mentioned the kind of influence on my on the podcast. Car Talk, definitely on National Public Radio's WNYC. It was the station that we got in New York and New Jersey, WNYC. The Car Talk guys, you can't approach them, but they could. They certainly were an influence. You know, I knew they had elements, comedic elements that you could look forward to each show or every couple shows, like Stump the Chumps. And their credits, you know, the closing credits, their car driver was they had a Russian car driver, Pickup Andropov. So, you know, stuff like that. Cornball. Right. Exactly. Corn. But you could count on it. Every week they were going to credit Pickup Andropov for being their chauffeur. So things like that. And then so elements of the Car Talk show, and then also another show on WNYC, which was Pure Talk, Brian Lehrer. I don't know if he's still there, but he became nationally syndicated, I think. Yeah, Amy and Scott, yes, you've heard Brian Lehrer. He originates from WNYC.
He's still there.
He is still there.
Still on WNYC every weekday.
Awesome, awesome.
That's well, been syndicated across the public media network.
Oh, across which network?
Public media.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Claire, I got the idea for the Tony Martinetti show from the Brian Lehrer show. But Tony Martinetti's not quite widely, and even in 2015, so even more so in 2015. What am I saying? In 2010, 15 years ago, not as widely known as Brian Lehrer. And so, you know, everybody knew him as a political junkie, and he had a lot of political guests, and that was mostly what he did, as well as general news, but
you have to reserve the Tony Martinetti show for just wherever you happen to be and the name of what chaos you are bringing to any scenario. You know, that's just the Tony Martinetti show. Nonprofit like, radio is a podcast, you know.
All right, thank you. Like when I go to N10, I could
that's right.
I could brand
like,
it.
Okay, get ready, everybody. It's the Tony Martinetti show.
When I go to the nonprofit technology conference each year hosted by N10. All right.
And so, you know what? We could have called it nonprofit podcast, but we put the word radio in it. You'd like that. You know, Tony Martinetti, yeah. Nonprofit radio. Because why, Tony? It's the sound of it.
Well, radio was an influence for the show. And I have some nostalgia for radio. And radio is a very personal medium. You know, like you're saying, listening in the car. It's just radio seems to be talking to me. You know, when I listen to radio,
yes,
I feel like the host, the DJ, they're talking to me. And that's what I want. You know, I want to be talking to our listeners, each of our listeners, and sort of channeling what interests them so that they're a part of the conversation as much as can be. So those were my thoughts for around why radio.
Well, and your instincts are correct, because when I was in, you know, broadcast journalism school at American University and we were learning the basics, we learned that radio and television, too, is a one-on-one medium. Like when you're talking, when you're on the air, you're just talking to one person. So you don't say like you all out there in radio land, you just say you. So if you're doing a news story about a traffic thing, you just say, you know, if you're traveling on, you know, I-270, blah, blah, blah. You don't say all you people out there on the road, thousands of people listening to me.
Right.
It's just you. And so it's a very personal medium.
Those were the influences. I'm glad Brian Lehrer still has the Brian Lehrer show nationwide. He was when you hear Brian, you'll know he was an early influence for this very show. And it's time for live song number one. Scott Stein,
hello again.
You're going to play a song that I asked you to play. Your album is Uphill. We might get this on the video. There's the album right there. It resides on my desk because I play it.
Oh, thank you.
The album is Uphill, which sounds challenging, but you made the last song, It's a Good Life.
Yeah, I think it's a challenging record. It was reflective of a fairly challenging time in my life, and it was important to, in the narrative of the record, to be building towards something hopeful or something that hints at something better to come.
I know folks are going to love the three songs you're doing for us today, so let's give an early shout. And where can we buy your music?
Oh, the best way to support me directly is actually at my Bandcamp site. So that would be scottstein.bandcamp.com. You can order physical CDs or purchase downloads. That's the best way, because there's really no middleman other than the little bit that Bandcamp takes. My music is also available in the iTunes store, which is also, if that's your preferred method, that's great. And it's also on the streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music, etc., etc.
Everywhere fine music is heard.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you. Please, Scott. It's a good life.
All right.
I got some inside information. Someone slipped me a copy of the master plan. My sources were dependable, but they're in a language I don't understand. And though I've always been a cynic since the day that I can remember, always skipping past silver linings, always looking for the snow in September. But baby, 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 it's a good life. Oh, baby, baby, it's a good life. No matter who you are, we all can see the nearest star. Some days you can't get a damn thing done. Some days you get the car keys. Some days it's the keys to the kingdom. Sometimes the changing of the guard is faster than the changing of the season. Very good reasons. But baby, 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 it's a good life. Oh, baby, baby, it's a good life. No matter how you sing the song, there's always someone singing along. Ooh, baby, baby, it's a good life.
Scott, that's just a beautiful song. Beautiful song. Yes. Don't just stick to what you know. Let it fly and watch it grow. I love that. I love that line, but the whole song. Lovely. Beautiful. Oh. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Mm. Claire, it's a good life.
It is a good life, especially here on the 750th Tony Martinetti nonprofit radio broadcast. And, you know, Tony had to learn what's called Audacity in order to produce his podcast. And I have a podcast and I do it in GarageBand. And now with AI, there's a lot of tools. So Scott, I'd like to ask you, you know, you're a musician and you're in this world. How do you like, do you produce your own music and record it? And how does that all go?
Yes, in a way. I always have a team around me of some sort. I play a number of instruments, but not all of my instruments. Usually when I'm doing a recording, I mean, I don't have my own studio, so I will go into somebody else's studio and do the work. I can do a little bit here at home, but most of it has to happen elsewhere. And I always have a producer on the project. And in that case, their role is to be kind of the in charge of the project and to be an expert set of ears. You know, I always want somebody who can tell me, hey, that vocal line's not working, or hey, that's really good, do more of that. Coming up with ideas for instruments, especially this last record where there's a lot of textures, synthesizers, things that I don't usually use. And I did that because I went to a specific producer, a friend of mine named Mark Marshall, because I knew he was somebody who could help me figure out what the sounds in my head were and how to get them out and how to do it effectively and to bring his own experience and his own expertise into the room.
You know, the role of a producer is so important. And I work in the nonprofit space like Tony, and, you know, we have conferences, right, and meetings, and we do webinars and all that. And because my background is production, when I'm working on something, I bring those skills, you know, to the event or the webinar or whatever. And a lot of times I'll do like a rundown or a show sheet, and the person will go like, wow, you know, I've never seen this. And I think the role of production is very like underrated in the nonprofit space. Like when you put on an event or when you do something, like how do you produce that? And because there's so many little pieces to it. And Amy, when it comes to the N10, I'm sure there's a huge amount of production involved in that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, Tony will laugh. Like everything, there's an N10 way that we do things versus maybe the standard way. But we don't have a staff person whose job title is the conference. We don't have a producer. You know, when you're having a large in-person event, there's what they call a pre-con, which is meant to be like, you know, the incoming group, like somebody from N10 would go and represent us. And then there's like the head of catering, the head of security, the head of AV, that, you know, everybody sits there like behind a little, you know, name tent and kind of reports in before the doors open and all the work starts. And all 15 of us show up and they're always like so baffled. And, you know, they're like looking for chairs and everybody's like, no, it's fine, I can stand, you know. And then when they like ask, okay, everybody go around, all 15 of us do an intro, you know, because everyone on the team produces the NTC and everybody has different pieces of it that they're in charge of. And, you know, our like escalation is to the team. Okay, if something's not working, who is available, like on radio, right? Who's available to meet in the staff office and solve this? There's not just one person who all that weight is on their shoulders and they have to decide everything. But really, you know, I think we say to the community, we're always stronger together, and we are always stronger together. So we do it as a team.
Very collaborative. Yeah.
Totally.
In your professional life, what kind of things do you present? Do you speak at, you know, conferences? Do you do webinars? Tell us a little bit about what you do, where the role of like producing it and putting it together and then presenting it come together.
Yeah, that's I'm always dependent upon other organizations and other people to put it together. But yeah, I do a lot of webinars and speaking at conferences and things like that. And very, very thankful for all of those people who can make it come together, because I just talk and maybe show a few slides.
So you do produce those slides, perhaps. You are putting together your slides with your key points.
There you go. And I try to keep them heavily visual, which is really, really hard for a lawyer.
Yeah. So on a what's a typical topic you might speak on? What's your specialty that everyone wants to hear Gene talk about?
Well, I'll say right now, it's about nonprofit advocacy. And, you know, during these challenging times, nonprofits do have a voice and they do have influence. And thanks to vehicles like Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, we get to help encourage nonprofits to learn what their sort of authority is, because it's usually a lot greater than they think it might be, so that they can speak out and hold the line when the line seems to be moving and pushing them back.
That's really interesting, because these are kind of, you know, tumultuous times. I was at the Carolinas Planned Giving Conference back in May, and we had a whole panel about legal stuff, and we had some really good speakers. And the one thing that I took away from it was that there has become a in our society, there's a lot of distrust now in government organizations, even nonprofits and things like that. There's this sort of, you know, distrust that there used to be. People trusted, you know, basically trusted the government and trusted colleges and trusted nonprofits. But now there's been an erosion, I think was the word that they used. And do you find that there's kind of an erosion of trust these days, Gene?
Yeah, I think in all areas, there's a little bit of erosion of trust and skepticism from the general public. But the nonprofit sector still, I believe, is leading as the most trusted area. And that's really something to hold on to. As we can build bridges and then sort of take a stance in what we're doing. So really, really just counting on nonprofits, if you will, to continue to sort of advance human rights, civil rights, all of the things that the nonprofit sector has traditionally done. And so I'm hopeful for better times and more nonprofit voice out there.
That's an excellent point. And I think that nonprofits can use that in their messaging, to their public facing messaging about how, you know, trusted they are. And they can show that in different ways by, you know, having a survey or showing their, you know, their output, like we did XYZ this year and have photos of it and really show that nonprofits are working and working for their mission and for their people and for their donors.
Yeah, and it's not all of the regular things that people might be thinking of with ICE and with some civil liberties, but just things like AI. And, you know, what happened with OpenAI, housed in a nonprofit? Is it going to be a for-profit? It's like there's a lot of stuff out there where the nonprofit sector plays a critical role, and standing up for what the nonprofit sector is supposed to be is really important. But thanks for asking, Claire.
So when you say AI is a nonprofit, I don't even know. I mean, I use ChatGPT quite a bit. It helps me, you know, figure things out. And you know, it's like someone to talk to that's a trusted person who does not have an ego. So I do use the ChatGPT for work. But what do you mean AI is a nonprofit?
Well, OpenAI, the creators of ChatGPT, it was started by Sam Altman and Elon Musk as a nonprofit organization. And they housed much of the assets that still run ChatGPT. So the whole intellectual property owned by it, how Microsoft has come in with a lot of money, whether it was going to turn into a for-profit, or it has turned into a for-profit, or is shuttled, the assets were probably licensed back down into the for-profit, although we don't know all of the sort of the mechanics of it. But ultimately, thanks to some nonprofit advocacy out there, it's going to be stayed sort of this tied to this nonprofit organization and not just completely moved into a for-profit. And the nonprofit is supposed to maintain the ethics of the AI use, you know, whether it's been successful or not. At least there is some regulation around how that AI can be used. So I'm thankful for that. And the nonprofit advocacy that kept that nonprofit in that game.
And I think, you know, when my friends who don't understand nonprofits that much, and they go, well, aren't nonprofits this or that? And I always say, well, you know, the number one thing about a nonprofit is it's non profit. No one can make like a ton of, yes, you can pay your people big salaries or whatever. You can spend a lot of money on things, but you don't have shareholders and you can't make a profit. So Gene, do you think that that's an important element of AI staying as a nonprofit because it can be less, I don't know, greedy?
Yeah, I think that is part of the point is that it's not just influenced by people who are self-interested and you know, self-dealing to themselves and their buddies. But it also is like the attorney generals and the IRS saying, hey, you have to engage in primarily charitable activities. It can't be just purely commercial. So let's see whether you are actually engaging in charitable activities and how strict the regulators are and how much enforcement you can do when you've got limited resources, especially these days for the IRS, is another question. But I'm, again, thankful that there is a nonprofit sector in the U.S. It's not completely unique, but it is something special that the country needs to treasure. And nonprofit radio right there.
As we're talking about artificial intelligence, it's important to point out that it's not all AI that is part of a nonprofit. We're just talking about what Gene's just talking about, one company, the nonprofit OpenAI, the one founded by Sam Altman. There are lots and lots of for-profit artificial intelligence, large language model entities. So, you know, we're just talking about the OpenAI remaining nonprofit, which is promising so far, like as Gene is saying.
Yeah, this is a great topic for our 750th Tony Martinetti nonprofit radio show. Tony, you've brought so many different experts onto your show. You've helped so many people over 15 years. It's just truly, truly amazing.
It's a labor of love. And now I get to do it each week with Kate. So we're talking about production, Kate. Well, how do you feel about what we produce each week?
Oh, well, I always look forward to it because I get to come and meet with my uncle on Zoom. And that's always a lot of fun with my godfather. You know, I get to go bother him. feels good to put something out each week, something that you're obviously passionate about. And I'm starting to become passionate about it just by listening to our show each week. And it's something that I can like now talk about with others and be like, hey, I'm doing this podcast with my uncle and this is what we're doing. And this is how we're helping people.
Cool. Oh, I'm glad. Like you feel empowered and you're spreading the word of the value of nonprofits in our country. That's awesome. I'm very glad to hear that. That's awesome. Awesome.
Skills. What kind of skills have you picked up, Kate, since you've been doing this endeavor? Have you picked up any new skills?
Well, on the more like production side, Tony has taught me how to use Audacity. It's not something that I personally use every day, but he was able to like teach me what he knows if I did ever want to produce something of my own vocally. So that's pretty cool. Because I had no clue how to do anything with, like, a mic. I didn't know how to, I guess, edit my voice, if I'm too loud or too soft, that kind of thing.
Nice. It's good.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah, very glad. And in a couple of weeks, your family will be visiting, and we'll be doing the show side by side.
I always look forward to that.
From my studio office every late August. Yes. All right. Scott. You're going to do another song for us. I want to remind folks, the best place is Bandcamp. Best place to buy your music. Is it bandcamp.scottstein, did you say?
It's the other way around. It's scottstein.bandcamp.com.
Thank you. Okay. Best place. But you're also, of course, on Apple, Spotify.
Yes. All those services.
Wherever fine musicians are heard.
Indeed.
So this song, intro this song for us.
It actually brings us back to an earlier conversation because I always tell people this is a song about what happens when, like, you begin by hearing your favorite song. Maybe you hear it on the radio, and then you hear it in a bar, and then as years pass, eventually you hear it at CVS. Yeah. So that's what I'll say. And our coping mechanisms. This is a new-ish song. It has not been recorded yet, so maybe at some point in the future it will be available commercially. And I assume my keyboard's coming through okay, yes?
Yes, all yep. Right, and your check. Balance is very good, yes.
Fantastic.
Driving okay. Too fast.
All right, here we go. The alarm goes off early in the morning, and I roll on out of bed. Leftovers of last night's dream still running through my head. And I make my coffee, make my breakfast, rub my eyes and start the day. I drop the kids at school and kiss goodbye, and I am on my way. We live out on a quiet little street, on a quiet little block. Kind of place where you can drift away, where you can leave the doors unlocked. And at the far end of the street there's a highway, you can hear the river burn. And sometimes in the evening I take my car to the edge and make my turn. I'm driving too fast on the highway. I know I'm headed somewhere, but I don't know how. I feel that sudden wind blowing through my hair. Nothing on my mind except the open air. I'm driving too fast on the open road. I don't care what direction, don't care where it goes. Speeding past the corner of my hometown, but I'll be back home before the sun goes down. That I was younger when you met me, when we didn't have a care. It's true that I got one foot on the ground and the other in the air. Sometimes I'm not sure whose face is in the mirror every day. Am I looking at the face of a survivor, or just one that's turning gray? I'm driving too fast on the freeway now. I'm trying to feel lighter, but I don't know how. Listening to songs from way back when, wondering when a way back's coming back again. I'm driving too fast on the open road. I don't care what direction, don't care where it goes. Counting down the miles till the speed trap town. But I'll be back home before the sun goes down. And I know it's getting late now, and I know it's almost night, and I know you think I'm reckless, and I know you're probably right. And I know that I'm lucky, that nothing's guaranteed. I know that I got all the love that I will ever need. I still feel like a young man. I know that I got time. It's hard to slow the car down without the fear of being left behind. I'm driving too fast on the highway. From
Fantastic, Scott. Thank you. Driving too fast.
Thank you.
I'll go a new direction, but I don't know where. I'll find a new direction, but I don't know where it goes. A lot of you have some brilliant lyrics. You turn some very good phrases. Yes, outstanding. Thank you. Scott, it was show number 158 in 2013. It was September of 2013 when you first debuted "Cheap Red Wine" as our theme song. So number 158 to 750. I get inspiration from "Cheap Red Wine." I listen to it on my own time as well. I just love it. I'm so glad that we got connected by your attorney friend and my attorney, Joe Becker.
Yeah.
And that the Cheap Red Wine is a part of Nonprofit Radio for so long. So thank you.
Thank you. I'll put a quick plug in. He's going professionally now as J.R. Becker, author of a number of children's books, which have done really well. So if you have kids and you're looking for like thought-provoking children's books, like, yeah, his stuff is great.
J.R. Becker. Yeah. What a humble artist you are, throwing to somebody else. A lot of artists wouldn't do that.
Well, you got to have a network of people who support you, right? Yep. And it works when you support in kind.
That was very gracious. Thank you. Claire Meyerhoff, you joined with your first show was show number 2.
Really?
Single digits. Show number 2 was July 23rd of 2010. And we talked about
15. That's amazing.
We talked about storytelling and jargon.
Yes, Jargon Jail.
I developed Jargon Jail thanks to you.
Jail.
I still put folks in Jargon Jail. So that's thank you very much. I love having you as a creative producer. Thank you.
You're welcome, Tony.
Jean, you joined next. You joined show number 7. It was your first show with us in August of 2010. So just a month later, a month after we started, show number 7. And that was the show when we had Stephanie Strom was also on the show. She used to be the New York Times reporter. But Jean, you've been with us a long time. Thank you very much.
It's always been my pleasure, and also to often be in Jargon Jail.
No, well, you always skirt Jargon Jail because you explain things. Amy, you joined in show number 100.
Yeah.
It was July of 2012.
Yeah, the bar was high. I was like, there's live music. There's all these other people. Like, I guess this is the show every time. No, that was just because it was the 100th show.
And that was my first time we announced that we had 1,000 listeners.
Yes.
Now, of course, we have over 13,000 each week. But
now Kate will get to experience what I got to experience in the early days of getting to sit next to each other at your microphones in the studio.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. When we both
really cut Tony off on his jokes a lot faster than the way Zoom does it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's not a good practice. We don't want to do that too often. Yes, when we were both in New York City, we would come into Sam's studio. We'd be side by side. And Kate joined. Kate joined in show number 645, mm-hmm. which was June of 2023. It started as something fun. Her family was visiting and I wanted to try it out because she's a trained professional and in voice, and I just love the way it sounded. So we've been with it since.
That's so sweet. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. You came to me and you were like, well, I need to do my show. Do you want to do the sponsors and kind of introduce people? And I was like, yeah, I'll try. I was a little nervous. But then I ended up really enjoying it, and you ended up enjoying it, and now I'm here.
Absolutely. Yep. So thanks to each of you. It wouldn't be Nonprofit Radio without each of you. So thank you. And our listeners, I'm speaking to you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for your support. I'm talking right to you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. It wouldn't be Nonprofit Radio podcast, a podcast without listeners. That's called a diary. So we're not a diary. We're a podcast, and I'm grateful that we have you as a listener with us. Thank you.
But
Thank
Tony,
you.
you need some gratitude also, because in 15 years, I was not Claire or Jean, so but came in at 100, so still somehow I've been here for 650 of these, and you have changed. The show has evolved. It's hard to change. Humans are not good at change, and you have been open to change, to supporting the sector, to meeting people where they are. And I just want to give you some flowers.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much, Amy. It's an honor to do the show and to help our community. And so that's why I'm grateful to each of you for helping us, because we're all contributing. We're all helping the nonprofit community. We're doing it through Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Claire, you have a little ode to radio.
I do, Tony, because I've just known you for so long, and every year we talk about this anniversary show. Oh, what are we going to do? And we've done skits, right? We've done like all kinds of crazy things, quizzes and skits over the years. So this year I thought I would just write you a little poem. So here is my ode. It's on my phone. Here is my ode to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. So many shows, thousands here, 13,000 people, 15th year. It's a podcast to help nonprofit folks with shared expertise, peppered with jokes. Show after show, guest after guest, Tony features only the best. 15 years now, an epic feat. 750 shows, each one a treat. Because Tony strives for podcast perfection, always moving in the right direction. To host a podcast week after week takes commitment and time. It's not for the meek. It's for a guy like Tony who cares a great deal, cuts through the noise, keeps it real, hosting his show with zeal and zest, educating, pontificating, and all the rest. Well, this ode is now nearing its end, written by Claire, Tony's longtime friend. So, Tony, for you, I offer three cheers. And for nonprofit radio, best wishes for the next 15 years.
Thank you, Claire.
I
Zeal and zest. Thank you, Claire. That's very sweet.
know.
Thank you. Thank
I wrote
you.
that last night while watching Boardwalk Empire, which I love. I sat there and came up with my little poem on my iPhone. And I was inspired all about this, radio show, because this happens to be the 40th anniversary of Live Aid, which was the huge contest concert at Wembley Stadium in London to benefit the problems in Africa with starvation and the situation. And Queen performed this massive 21-minute set that's just epic, that people watch over and over again. And when Freddie Mercury sings the Radio Gaga and that song, it's really an ode to radio, which at the time, radio was being threatened by this new MTV thing and music videos, and would radio die? And I can't believe in 1983 that they wrote this song, especially these lyrics in it. You've had about radio, you've had your time, you've had your power, you've yet to have your finest hour. What did Queen mean by that in 1982, the finest hour? Could it possibly have been, I don't know, looking into the future and being podcasting?
Wow.
Their own tribute to radio. Absolutely right. Yeah.
I'm gonna cry.
Someone still loves you.
Beautiful.
I've heard that I saw in a couple places that Lady Gaga is named for that song. Her love of that song is why she chose Lady Gaga. Claire, thank you again for the ode.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. You know, I'm not much of a poet, and I know it, but I have written many a birthday, bridal shower, funeral. You know, I've written lots of poems for friends when they say, I don't know what I'm going to say. I'll say, well, you know, let's write a little poem. And I'll come up with a little poem, like that little ode to my friend Tony, who works so hard, because people don't realize the amount of work that goes into a podcast, to booking guests, to, you know, actually, you know, organizing the whole thing, writing it, you know, all the little things that go into it. And for Tony, for you to do it week after week, 750 shows, 50 shows a year. You know, some people can manage like one podcast a month. They, you know, they do a podcast for a little while and it falls off. There was an article in the New York Times a few years ago that said like the average podcast. Do you remember that, Tony? That the average podcast only lasted like so long and then it fell off.
Well, look, Michelle Obama's podcast did not last. Bruce Springsteen and Barack Obama had a podcast together. No. Both of those podcasts, Michelle Obama was by herself. Barack and Bruce were co-hosts. Those two podcasts are survived by Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Well, we started before them and we're continuing, and they've tanked.
You know, I've read about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle and how they got this great deal with Spotify, right, to do all these podcasts, but they could never really get it done. They just did like a little bit. And I read that, you know, they would go into meetings and have these highfalutin ideas about like, oh, let's interview like Putin and Trump together. Like, that wouldn't that be a great podcast? Well, yeah, that would be a great podcast. But do you like know these people? Can you book these guests?
Yeah.
And their podcast failed, you know, as far as I know. And that's Spotify just said, you know, see ya. Because it's the content. Like, if you can't make the content, it doesn't matter who you are. If you can't create that content, if you can't show up week after week and get your guests to show up, because that's a hard thing, is to book the guests and get the time and put it all together.
Well, and that's why radio was such an important influence for me, because the shows I mentioned and just every radio show has to produce. Some are daily, like the Brian Lehrer show, was daily and still is. And Car Talk was weekly. But, you know, those early influences, and every other show I used to listen to on WNEW, you know, the hosts had to show up for their 4-hour block, right, every day. And I guess, you know, that's the inspiration. That's why it's Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio.
750 shows. Wow. And that's 15 years. So in 15 more years, we'll have what, 1,500 shows in 15 years. How old will we be?
We will. I'll be 78.
My God.
We can do that. We can do that. I'm going to keep working until I become a dinosaur and nobody will hire me anymore. But that has nothing to do with nonprofit radio. The podcast will continue even after I'm a dinosaur. All right. The time has come for me to say thank you. Thanks very much for you being with us for the 750th. I look forward to these every single year for a month in advance. We've been counting down on the show. Kate knows. Three, four weeks ago, I started counting down every single show. It's 2 weeks away. So we're here. So thank you. Thanks to each of you. And again, thank you to our listeners. Thank you for listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. We wouldn't be a podcast without you. We'd be a diary. Scott, this beautiful song that I licensed, so glad, as I said, J.R. Burton, is it?
Becker.
J.R. Becker brought us together. Yeah. Cheap Red Wine. I love adding it to the beginning and end of each and every show. Please.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to do it. And again, congratulations, 750, my goodness. So.
Thank you.
All right, here we go. Thank you.
talking. Sooner or later I'll figure out just what you mean. You're singing romantic advice from a bill, but I'm looking for answers up on a TV screen. And we can't get nothing. We can't tell our ups from our downs. We're disappointed in each other. Now tell me, baby, ain't this love that we found? You know you used to find me charming, but I can't figure out how. You said you thought I was handsome, but it doesn't matter now. So be falling for my punches as long as your time will allow. Cause I'll have got a red meat promises, a bottle of cheap red wine, and now. For diamonds, they won't talk to the kind of clothing that I wear. Well, I'm too poor to afford the good stuff, and you're too easily distracted to care. Well, I ain't got too many options, and so I'm gonna do the best that I can. But maybe you'll have some competition one day when I'm a wealthier man. You used to find me charming, but I can't figure out how. You said you thought I was handsome, but it doesn't matter now. So keep falling for my punchlines as long as your time will allow. Cause I'll have got to rip your promises, a bottle of cheap red wine, and now. And I ain't gonna curse the heavens, though I won't flash no victory signs. Cause we're pumping for each other as long as we've nobody else in mind. Nobody's waiting in line. Oh, we're just like cheap red wine. Matter now. So keep falling for my punchlines as long as your time will allow. Cause I've got already promises about that cheap red wine and now. A cheap red wine and now.
Any part of this week's show?
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this glorious live music is by Scott Stein.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Oh, my. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Always so much better live, Scott.
Aw, thank you.